100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day of a 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, it's Digital Sister, and I am back. Happy, happy New Year. I hope that you have, you know, that you're just starting off the year with some fresh approaches and some fresh outlooks, and that you're going to make this year a good year for you. But again, Happy New Year, and I'm glad that you're back tuning in to the first podcast of the first New Year. Thank you for tuning in. Well, let me just start first of all by saying we send out our condolences to the family of President Gerald R. Ford. And, you know, this time around with the state funeral has been very interesting. I think what comes across is how his character and how, you know, they were just regular folks despite the fact that he was president. I remember I was in high school when he was president during that time after he took over as Nixon was disgraced from the Watergate situation. And at some point at that time, I think people wanted blood from Nixon because of what he had done. But Gerald Ford had another vision. He took the heat for giving Nixon a full pardon because he didn't really want to drag the country through any more crap that it had already been through. And that really took a steely character to do that. And he did that with great grace. And he never flinched about that decision. And, you know, sometimes decisions can be unpopular, but looking at the big picture, it was the best thing that could have been done at that time, because the last thing we needed then at that time was to have the country dragged through a lot of crap. You know, fast forward 30 years, that's another story, but let me finish my thought on President Ford first. And I remember that, you know, they just seemed to be a decent family. You know, they would show pictures of him making his own toast and doing regular things. And I also think, and I remember, you know, Betty, his wife Betty, she seemed to be, you know, just a pretty decent, regular, down-to-earth type of person. She struggled with her addictions for many, many years, but I think it speaks highly of the family that they dealt with it, and she got help. And not only did she get help, but she founded the Betty Ford Clinic, which I think every celebrity and well tooled non-celebrity has been there for treatment for their addiction. So not only did she have her own demons to conquer, she turned it around and created something, a lasting institution to deal with the issue of addiction and to help people, you know, get themselves together and to get clean. And so it is with a fond memory that we say we send our condolences to the family. And as I was saying earlier, the family pared down some of the formal ceremonial aspects that were to be part of the state funeral because in their mind, yes, he was president, but he was just a regular guy. And I kind of compare that to the state funeral that we saw with Ronald Reagan. You know, he professed to not want big government and all of that. But at the end, that's what he had. He had big government to the very end with his ceremony. So I think what the Fords have shown is that you can have that great respect because that's what the office provides. But they put a little bit of a personal touch on the situation because that's just how they were. They didn't need a lot of the extra pomp and circumstance that we saw with the Reagan funeral. And so we just send our condolences to the family, and we send our condolences to Mrs. Ford, and hope that there's a level in comfort in seeing that the nation appreciated the very unpopular but necessary decision that her husband made some 30-plus years ago. And we thank her for not just being someone who just said no, but she actually, you know, wrestled with her demons and did something about it. And then ultimately, as I said earlier, built an institution that will last for a very long time to help people fight their addictions. And one other thing I thought was very, very touching and moving was that, as you know, the Ford family had, you know, they were avid skiers and had a home in Vail. And I thought it was very touching to see all the ski instructors. There apparently were quite a few, but they had red torches, and they showed their sympathy by skiing down a mountain in a formation with the red flare. I just thought that was very touching and very moving, and it probably speaks to how much the Ford family was loved in Vail, because they were just, you know, regular people. And so again, we say a fond farewell to President Gerald R. Ford. Wow, isn't that something what Oprah did, building her school? And she made good on this promise that she made to Nelson Mandela some over 6 years ago. But it has come to fruition. So the school that she has built will initially have 150 young girls, 12 and 13 years old, who are going to have a beautiful new school in South Africa, in which they can begin their studies with. And it's a $40 million building project. It has 28 buildings on 22 very lush acres. The rooms have fireplaces in every building, a yoga studio, indoor-outdoor theaters, and a beauty salon. And I just think it's wonderful that she has done something like that and really given an opportunity to some young ladies who absolutely would never get this kind of opportunity. And again, you know, taking your wealth and your prestige and putting it in a place that your ancestors came from. And that's very much, I think, what a lot of the Jewish people do that have those kinds of means. They have the kinds of means, but then they go to Israel and they, you know, maybe build a new wing on a hospital or whatever they feel is necessary in their country. So I think it's wonderful that Oprah is able to do that, and she's doing it there. It was kind of interesting because I was watching, you know, the newscast as they cut the ribbon, and the girls were very excited and everything. And then there was an African woman who stood up and said, "Well, what do you say to the families of white girls who want to attend the school? What do you say to that?" And Oprah kind of took offense, you know, rightly so, to say, you know, I don't have to appease them, meaning the whites of South Africa. And I thought, what an interesting question for an African woman to ask. And if she was a native of South Africa, I mean, you know, apartheid was in place for a very, very long time, and the government didn't care about how or whether or not the young black girls were educated or in an environment where they could see beauty and reflect beauty and ultimately become beautiful. I mean, they didn't care about that. So I thought it was very interesting that you have, you know, a black African woman asking such a question. You know, I wanted to say, I was yelling at the TV, excuse me, just a few short years ago, you know, nobody was concerned about you, you know, so it's like, what's that all about? That kind of reminded me of, remember Henry Louis Gates, and he did one of his very wonderful specials on Timbuktu and what has happened to that great, that once great trade area. But just if you don't know, an example was he met with some natives of Timbuktu, and the level of, I think, self-hatred that they feel was just so deep that they couldn't even admit that they were African. They were calling themselves Persian, because, you know, with slavery, with other groups, very often the masters married their slaves, unlike the horrible slavery that you saw in the United States. But in any event, in Timbuktu, these black Africans wouldn't admit that they were black. They said they were Persian. And that blew Henry Louis Gates away. He said, wait a minute, now if we're walking down the street in Philadelphia, they're going to see three black men. They're not going to see that you're Persian. But anyway, that gets back to, I think, how deeply ingrained some self-hatred is, you know. So I thought that was very interesting that this black African woman asked Oprah, what about the white girls and what about the young schoolgirls? And rightly so, she said that the school would be open to all. But initially, I think she's going to work to help at least the black African young ladies first. And she probably, Oprah probably may have to open it up. That's okay, you know, you can have one or two or three or, you know, have a small group. But again, she should not lose focus of what the mission of that school is, which is to educate, provide a source of opportunity and a sense of beauty and a sense of self-esteem to young black African schoolgirls. So kudos to Oprah. I love her because she does good things with her money. She just doesn't just talk about it. Wow, check this out. Looks like something else is going on down in Atlanta where they're taking crunk music to the pulpit to kind of reach young people and get them more in tune or interested in coming to church. It's, you know, crunk is out of Atlanta, hi-fi is out of San Francisco, and snap music also is kind of like from the Atlanta, some of the other southern states, you know, New Orleans, things like that. But these are the new styles that have come out. And it's very interesting because crunk music is kind of characterized with the electronic drums, synthesized brass sound. You know, it's beats. You know, it's just a different way the beats are put together. And it was popularized by Southern-based producer Lil Jon, who's known for his trademark shouts and hit singles Get Low and Snap Your Fingers. I think I know Snap Your Fingers. But in any event, you know, what a lot of them are doing is bringing this unorthodox approach to some churches. And, of course, it's causing a little uproar in some congregations because, you know, they're not up for that, shall we say. But then some are looking at ways to have music or have an environment that is going to draw the young people in. And so, as I will talk a little bit more about this in later in the podcast, those congregations that are looking at those new styles to bring into their church to connect with the young people are really looking at doing something innovative. And when you do innovative things, you have to expect resistance. You know, not everybody's going to go for that. They're going to say, well, you know, do you have to do that to get them in? Well, I mean, why not? Why not offer an environment that is youth-friendly? And if the music isn't saying horrible things about women or whatever, if that's going to be something that gives them a message to come, why not? You know, why not let them do that? Why not let them try new things? So it'll be interesting to see how that goes, and will other congregations pick up on that. I mean, just a few years ago, you didn't see praise dancing. Now everybody's doing praise dancing in their churches, you know. They didn't used to be any gospel hip hop. You have that. You have the bridge with some of the modern contemporary, the Kirk Franklins, the Vicky Winans, the CC Winans, Martha Minuzzi. I mean, all of these folks are blending, modern day styles, with the gospel flavor. So my thing is, you know, if these adults can do it, why can't we do something that encourages the young people? And I think that's what we have to look at. We have to look at not just always talking about the young people and what they are or are not doing, but we need to create environments that are supportive of them. I think as we get older, we forget that we were, you know, young and into different types of music that was reflective of that particular period, but we forget, and we tend to, it's like the kids are okay from the time that they're, you know, newborn up to the time they're about preteen, let's say 12, let's say 11 almost, you know, and then it seems like society just kind of wants to turn a blind eye to them. And so let's say from age 12 to 18, where that is the time where teenagers are apt to have problems, get into trouble, whatever, we just seem to ignore them and blow them away as if they are irrelevant. And then we want to pick back up with them, let's say when they're 25, you know, but we've blown away a whole generation. I mean, as I talked about earlier in my podcast, that's why Paris was burning last year. You know, the old guard wants to hang on to the benefits and make sure that their employment is guaranteed, but they didn't want to make room for the young people. And hence you have a country with a high unemployment rate of young people, because the older generation does not want to make room for the younger. And so eventually what you're going to have, and we're dealing with that here to some degree, is not having the available young people to fill in the gap and take over. I mean, you know, you just can't hang on to the old and not make room for the new. I mean, you can, but it's going to cause some problems down the road. But in any event, getting back to what I'm talking about, I think, you know, churches need to be innovative, and many of them are, you know, but I think you have to find different ways and test the waters to find interesting things that will grab the attention of young people and get them involved in your church mission. Don't just blow them away and criticize just because it's a style of music that you may not like. Wow, isn't there something about Ed Braley? I saw this in the news that he passed away November 9th, and it seems that, and I say in quotes, that they're going to deal with finding a replacement and looking at it as a long-term project. Well, hell yeah, it has to be a long-term project, because they probably have not groomed anyone to fill his shoes. I'm sure when you look at the reporters that are part of 60 Minutes, you know, they're older, they've been around for a long time. It seems like it's a little clubby atmosphere. But, you know, you didn't see much new energy coming in there. And so probably they don't really have anybody. And that speaks to what I've spoken to before about why we need to make sure we have some kind of affirmative action in place so that there is room for diversity. If they cannot find anyone, and I use the term find anyone, it's going to be just the same old guard. And I think they're being very careful about just slapping somebody in there for the sake of slapping somebody in there, you know, a majority type of person. But clearly, they don't have anybody of color. And so they're probably scrambling a little bit, or putting it on hold, or just trying to figure out who could possibly fill those shoes, you know? And so that's why we need to have those systems in place to make sure that there's some element of diversity that we keep, so that we have different perspectives of people in the news, not just, you know, privileged people who are out of touch with what's going on in their country because they're so interested in international affairs. But, you know, we need somebody homegrown. So I'm hoping that they take this opportunity to look at the fact that perhaps, you know, it could be a good time to perhaps have some kind of training program or have something in place where you are developing a pool of future talent. Because it's not just Ed Bradley, but when you look at the rest of the correspondents, you know, they're up there. And eventually, they're going to get sick or have problems or maybe even pass away. So there needs to be something in place that brings new talent and new energy in and not just recycle the same old people in those positions. So I hope that CBS News will take this as an opportunity to maybe look at doing something a little innovative and doing something creative so that when some of the other correspondents are ready to move on for whatever reasons, there's somebody in place to take over and who knows the style, who knows how they work and what's expected of them. And there won't be this panic and like, oh my God, what are we going to do? You know, because there'll be somebody in place who's been trained, who knows the lay of the land, and can step in and fill those shoes. So it's going to be very interesting to see how long it takes for them to find a replacement and ultimately who will be the replacement for the irreplaceable Ed Bradley. Now, didn't I mention something about Saddam last week? And sure enough, they executed him. And this is my opinion, of course. I don't think, even though they executed him, that people are taking it quietly. I think there's going to be some regrouping, and I think it may not happen immediately, but there are going to be some ramifications somewhere, because what has happened now is that with his execution, you have the Sunni and the Shiite, you know, in more conflict, and it really has plunged the country into civil war, even more so. I mean, they're still dancing around it and not calling it civil war, but if you have people in the same country, the same people from the same groups fighting and killing each other, that is civil war, okay? And it was so bad that they couldn't even tell who was Shiite, who was Kurd, and who was Sunni. So you had to ask them who they were first, and then you kill them, because you can't even tell. And you're a native of that country, you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's got to stop. It's got to absolutely stop. And so I think, even though this execution was hailed by Washington as a milestone for Iraqi democracy, I think there's going to be some unintended consequences that may not come immediately within this week, but I think there's going to be some things that go on, you know, and I don't wish anything bad, and I hope not, but, you know, just by the way things are going, I just don't think a situation this big is going to go without any ramification. It's just a matter of when, how long, and what it will be. But I don't think people should be breathing a sigh of relief because this was done. I think this is a situation that has the potential to open up even more of a can of worms. And my point, I think I forgot to mention it earlier on in the podcast, was even President Gerald Ford back in 2004 said that he thought Rumsfeld, the president, and Cheney were wrong to justify the war based on weapons of mass destruction. So here was somebody else, another president, who didn't think it was a good idea. But in any event, you know, I just hope to God it doesn't turn into something horrible, but I just don't think it's going to go as a situation that's going to go unpunished, that it's just going to be accepted quietly. I just don't think that's the case, and I don't think we've even begun to think about that. And I think as Bush is rethinking his Iraq strategy, I think they better take that into consideration and stop thinking with this Cold War mentality that because this happened, it's okay. What they still haven't learned is we're dealing with a different type of animal this time around. We've plunged the country into civil war. There's so many cells popping up. There's so much hatred for the United States. I just don't think that situation is going to lie quietly. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't get that feeling. Just to talk a little bit about some information that I think for nonprofit organizations out there, as you start the new year, I talked about this in my show that I did earlier this evening, but this is a year to think about innovative things that you can do to generate more interest in your organization and even to motivate people who are already in your organization. You have to begin to think more strategic rather than just tactical, meeting, you know, putting out little fires. But you've got to develop a vision of where you are and where you would like things to go. And you just can't constantly put out fires. You have to kind of take on a different mindset. And keep in mind that really innovation is a core strategy for growth. So you have to figure out ways to be innovative. As I said before, I utilize my radio show on Global Talk Radio and this podcast as a method of introducing innovative ways to market the organization and to shed light on the nonprofit sector. And also what you have to keep in mind, too, innovation is a new way to growth. So if you're not being innovative, you're not growing. You're stagnating. And I think that is something that organizations, and particularly nonprofits, will want to look at and work on this year. You want to at least gather information, observe what's going on, what's been going on, develop some new concepts for yourself. Think about convergent thinking, like how, when you look at the big picture, how can you break it down and actually apply it to your particular situation, and then actually go out and implement what you are talking about. So innovation is something I think that's very necessary and something that you'll want to look at this year. Another thing that you'll want to look at is start developing a better understanding of the motivation of your donors. And two groups are emerging that you may want to consider. It's women and 30, 40-somethings who, you know, have done pretty well and maybe have a bit of extra resources that they can be philanthropic with. But you also want to look at how you connect with them, what are their concerns, and what is their capacity to give. And once you do that, then what you have to do is, as you find out what motivates your donors or potential donors, then you have to construct the right environment in which their motivation will flourish. So you have to you know, think about what motivates them, figure out what it is, and create the situation in your organization that's going to let these people be motivated and motivated enough to donate to you and to be a supporter of you and to even chat it up so even more people will know what your mission is and be willing to, you know, support and donate. Some things you want to consider is that they still, for the most part, make donations the traditional way through paper. 11% of people are starting to use online donation methods, but it's still the traditional way. And also, a lot of people give, but they don't have a set plan, so that's why you want to get with them and establish and ask and get them involved in supporting your cause. But yeah, these are some things that I want you to think about as we move forward in 2007, you know, to be more innovative, to kind of begin to think more about who your donors are, and then to figure out the innovative things that you can do to make your program interesting so people will want to come back and donate. That is what I have done, as I've said many, many times on my show and in the podcast, is utilizing new technology with internet radio and the podcast to create programming so that people are constantly coming by to tune in and check it out. But the key is they're constantly coming back. And as I said earlier, that is beginning to translate into online donations for our organization, the United Black Fund. So in any event, it's a little food for thought that I hope you will think about. And as I said in my show, you know, just stick your big toe out and put it in the water. Test the waters. Again, there's so many technologies out there. Everything is not something that you can utilize, but if you can find one or two things that you can utilize and apply it so that it works for you, that's a good thing. Just take a chance and give it a shot and see what happens. Be consistent, and that's mostly important. Just be consistent. Just keep doing it. Don't expect that you're going to have big changes immediately. Being innovative takes time. It takes time to put it into place. It takes time for people to initially understand what you're doing. So again, have patience, but at least just get out there and try. Well, in any event, I think this will be it for now. I want to thank my fans in Malaysia for coming back, and my friends in Japan and in Germany and all across the country. Happy New Year, especially to my big fans in the Denver area. I thank you so much for continuing to help Digital Sister grow. In any event, take what I've said, digest it a bit, think about it, and apply it, because I hope that 2007 will be a year of innovation for you, and I hope that some of the suggestions that I provide are things that you can utilize. In any event, have a great week. Again, Happy New Year, and I will be back with you in a few days. Take care and have a great week. Digital Sister, signing out.
The West Side, we're riding. The West Side, the West Side.